Welcome to CIO Yarn Live. I'm your host, Ryan the Lion, and we have two special guests. One you might recognize as a Kiwi, that's Glenn Willoughby, and one of our New Zealand CIOs. And our co-guest, you may or may not recognize, Tom Soderstrom, who is now with AWS, and we'll get a full introduction. But these two characters met while working together on projects at NASA, and we'll get the detail around NASA, JAGL, and the history from Glenn and Tom, respectively. But we're just so pleased and honored to be able to have you on our show. Thank you so much, both to you, Tom, and to you, Glenn. You know, the Kiwi connection to something like Tom's experience and your own experience together. It's a wonderful mix for us to be able to share. And of course, everyone else is wondering, how come this has popped up at 1:30 randomly? It's because we weren't able to schedule it too tightly. It's been bouncing around between Tom's schedule and Glenn's schedule, so we just roll with it. And I had the pleasure of saying, count us down, and in New Zealand we'd say we're about to kick off in 3, 2, 1, or if you're at NASA, you might say lift off. So here we are, and as always, gentlemen, if I could kindly ask you to introduce yourself AFQY style, so if we could hear a little bit about the person, because most of this discussion will be about the work and the tech and the wonderful things that you two have been working on over the years and what's coming up in the future as well. So shall we be polite, Glenn, and ask our international guest, Tom, to introduce himself first, if that's okay.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure, and thank you for wanting to talk to me. That's nice. I'm in Los Angeles, and I actually grew up in Sweden, and I went to the United States when I was 19 to swim. I was a swimmer, and it was either that or going into the military forces. So I went swimming, and 1 year turned to two, and two turned to three, and three turned to forever. So I still go back to Sweden a lot, but I'm now living in LA. The weather is a little nicer. I swim, and in the winters I ski, and most of the time I just innovate.
Wow. And Glenn has given me a little bit of insight into your history with NASA and the work you did around innovation. If you could give us a little brief overview, and especially for the viewers, of your background from NASA through to AWS, give us a little snapshot, and then we'll come over to Glenn after that.
Sure. So work-wise, as is not uncommon, when I graduated from college, I couldn't find a job. Nobody wanted me. So I ended up going into programming because that's what I knew how to do. And eventually, I found a job at JPL. And I stayed there for a long time. So I worked in the Deep Space Network and eventually became a manager and did some startups out of JPL. But what Jet Propulsion Laboratory does, it's a federally funded research center of NASA, and it explores the heavens. So it looks at deep space. So on Mars, for instance, JPL was the only one on Mars for a long time. Now there is company, thank goodness. But also looking out into where did the universe come from? Where is it going? And where is our place in the universe? Do we have a place to go if a big asteroid would hit us? Could we redirect that asteroid? Those type of questions. Are we alone? Is there life on Mars? Is there life on Europa? Is there life out there? And would we recognize it when we see it? That's JPL. And those are not things you talk about in a bar, just kind of random. They're actually things you're trying to figure out scientifically. How would we figure that out? And of course, all the launches and the spacecraft and perhaps most important, how do we protect Mother Earth? So my job was Chief Technology and Innovation Officer, a Chief Technology Officer for IT and innovation, trying to figure out, help everybody, where do we go and how do we use this IT? So it's really to enable others to be more productive by getting the latest technologies that we could possibly give them. So a lot of early going. One of the early things in 2008, we started using cloud computing. It was one of the trends we saw. And it led to now cloud computing is used for many, many things. So I, being one of the earliest enterprises, got to shape a lot of what AWS was doing. Was on their customer advisory board for 13 years. And then when it was time to do a new adventure, there was only one company I looked at. It's JPL, then AWS. Very similar culture, great place to be. And I am now Director of Chief Technologies globally, which means I get to work internationally again, which I missed. So that's me, and it's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the rundown. It's some really big questions for this whole world to think about, you know, from the deep space and what's out there and how are we created to how do we look after ourselves in the future. You know, climate change is an ever-present discussion question, and of course a lot of answers are probably out there in space. And I think there's some, you know, obviously there's been a discussion around the trip to Mars, we might get to that later on in discussion. So thank you so much for being on, and if we come back to skiing, swimming in Sweden. My brother happens to live in Aarhus with his wife. Oh, and nice. The only Swedish I can remember from when I was over there learning was tack, which is thank you, and välkommen, which is welcome. But let's go to Glenn and get an introduction. Glenn, so if you could give us the AFQI introduction and view as a person, a little bit out of work, and then also a bit of a rundown of the work you do, and maybe the connection between yourself and Tom, how that started today, would be lovely.
Sure, thanks, Ryan. Well, it's actually a bit of a theme in terms of background. I grew up in Cambridge, a small little town in the Waikato, and went to med school at Otago at a very young age, and dropped out in my first year, and then decided I'll move into IT. So I went back home to Cambridge and went to Waikato Polytech to do my first qual. So I'm a failed med student that went into IT. Spent some time in the health sector when I was in my 20s, and a project I'll come back to later was setting up the breast screening program way back then with a small company called Orion Health. Started playing soccer for many years at National League level. Still like to play Masters soccer, but my body just can't handle it. The hits are being too hard to get over, so now I play golf. Unfortunately, Tom and I are both in LA, and we would have been together, but circumstances have stopped that. So I'm in Beverly Hills at the Beverly Hilton, and Tom's lucky to be at home, probably just about to have dinner shortly. We met courtesy of the New Zealand CIO conference in 2015. Tom was invited over as the CTIO of NASA JPL. That in itself was pretty exciting from a CIO from New Zealand. But what was probably more exciting was the work that he had done in innovation in a large organization that is a public sector organization. So I couldn't help but drag him down to Wellington, to the DHBs I was working at the time, and at the 11th hour crammed my team and anyone who wanted to come and have a look, and asked Tom to repeat his presentation that he gave, which when you've got a group of people working in health, which is, you know, pretty hard, pretty underfunded, a lot of stuff breaks, it's nice to do something inspirational. And it really helped. We did a 3 or 4 projects around that time, which were pretty world leading, small projects, but it was a really great team. And since then, Tom's been a really strong friend of New Zealand. Whenever we've wanted to do something, I've usually just reached out to Tom. A couple of examples. One has been the New Zealand government wanted to form internships with NASA. They already had some going at another facility and were struggling to find anyone to talk to at JPL. So we met the New Zealand consulate team in LA at JPL in 2018, I think. I think it was the last time that we were on site there, Tom. And cut a long story short, we're now into our second year of internships. We had the first one announced at the US Embassy in New Zealand, and NASA JPL at that announcement offered 4 slots, which is unheard of. So we're one of the few countries that have 4 intern slots. We've had our second intake now, and 2 slots were filled. And Tom and I were just talking a few days ago with his 2IC back at NASA, now the CTIO at JPL, Chris Mattman. We were just confirming the long-term view of that. So that was great. Another project was around AI cancer detection, which we're just kicking off now. So the great thing about having relationships like Tom offshore is there are things you can do and doors you can open that it is just hard to do just stuck in New Zealand. So he's been a great friend to New Zealand, Tom, and to this day we're still happy to leverage off the support that you can offer.
No, it's a pleasure. And, you know, there's no accident that you started with one intern and you now have four. I was extremely impressed with the quality of the New Zealand candidates. We only had one slot at the time, but we would have brought all of them in. They were very impressive people, well-educated, well-spoken, hardworking, enthusiastic, entrepreneurial. I could go on, but extremely really impressed.
That's really pleasing to hear. Those are the sorts of descriptions you give to the Kiwis. And I wonder, I'm only guessing though, that you know, there's a bit of a long-term relationship with NASA that I never knew about until Glenn shared, which is, there's actually a road named after this gentleman just around the road from where I live here in Auckland, New Zealand, because he is a Kiwi, Sir William Pickering, and it's Sir William Pickering Drive. But I think everyone at NASA knew him as Bill, as I understand, but he had quite a long history there, hence the Kiwi connection has been there. Perhaps you could give us a little bit of a rundown between the two of you of that history and the relationship to JPL and NASA and all the different parts that I'll get wrong, so I'll leave it over to you to share with
certainly.
Us.
Briefly. And I think it would be appropriate for a Kiwi to talk about a Kiwi. So, Ben, you can start.
I'll make that. Well, I must admit, I was like yourself, Ryan. I'd only heard the name. I didn't know where it fit. And I first walked on site to visit Tom at JPL, good Lord, 2016, I think. Something of that era. You walk on site. And if you make a right turn, you walk into, I think it's called the museum, but it's not really a museum. It's the replicas of the spacecraft, right from some of the early missions, are in a room right next to the Von Karman Auditorium, which is a very famous auditorium at JPL that I think has been there definitely during William Pickering time. And in that auditorium, there's a very famous photo of the first satellite that was ever launched by NASA, which was developed, launched and managed by JPL. And this was a response to Sputnik and the start of the space race. So William Pickering, for at least for me at that time, was a name I couldn't place. At NASA, William Pickering is one of the fathers of space exploration that held the JPL director role for 22 years. And is held to this day in extreme high reverence. So I'd probably argue that I think JPLers know a lot more about William Pickering than most New Zealanders do.
No, it's an amazing thing. That William was so influential that he made JPL become part of the civil systems instead of the military. And that has, you know, it was 1958. And ever since, JPL has been a premier science for the good of humanity and for just for science sake. JPL does some military work, which is good, but that was because of the success of Explorer 1, which was a science satellite, US's first science satellite. Although Sputnik was first into space, but Explorer 1 came right after, which was remarkable. Because they launched it in almost no time, built it and launched it. Well, they actually didn't build it and launch it. They had built it beforehand, lost that contract to the Navy, and then the Navy one failed, and now JPL launched theirs, and it was successful. But the fact that it was a science satellite in response to Sputnik, but also has science instruments on it, made all the difference. So when NASA was formed, Pickering lobbied for JPL should be part of NASA, and it became that way. So huge legacy. He's a really big name.
So there's an amazing array of humble Kiwi stories that a lot of Kiwis don't even know about. There's another one. And thank you very much for both of you sharing that and giving us the lesson in history. I think there's something there for New Zealand. New Zealand history has just been made part of the national curriculum. Up until then, in schools in New Zealand, you could choose between I think it's English history, or they call it Victorian history, and New Zealand history, and pretty much no one taught New Zealand history. But it's now been 3 years ago the government put in place that there need to be New Zealand history taught. And if you think about it, the amount of American movies we all might have watched where they'll reference parts of the American history, I think I know more about American history learned from movies than I do know about New Zealand history. And here I am being taught again about a piece of our history and tech with us, Sir William Pickering, or where Bill was known. So let's fast forward to today, or you know, into your time, Tom. Talked about cloud innovation and mentioned 2008. So we've got 2008 through to 2022, and the project, the cancer project that Glenn mentioned with AI, the cloud innovation we've done that I'm not even aware of for JPL. If you'd like to share some of the insights or achievements around those projects that you're able to speak about, that would be fantastic. Give us some insight and more education about what's happening in the broader space.
And then, sure. We'll definitely talk about that one. Glenn and I have done some innovative things together. And it's been a benefit. One person in New Zealand, one person in the US, we see different things. And cancer research was one of them, and Glenn brought this one to the table, and I was looking at AI very early on as one of those emerging trends. So Glenn, do you want to take that story?
Yeah, sure. One of the benefits of space exploration, it's something I've come to appreciate more over the years, is you're doing something that's never been done before. And the great thing around what Tom had put in at JPL, he was at the forefront of bringing new ideas and new things to support the missions of JPL. And these were at times where cloud was a new concept, where AI was in its early days, where Alexa and Internet of Things were unclear to people what they were. Yet these were things at that time that in your innovation center, Tom, you were experiencing and showing and trialing and bringing people to see. So what we tend to have in the healthcare sector, where I've spent most of my background, is when you look at making a change with technology to try and improve healthcare service delivery and the outcomes to patients, it's a really slow process. It's not a process that you can accept risk. So what you can do when you see a innovation center at JPL that's so far ahead in its thinking, it allows you to shortcut your own learning and have a conversation around, imagine if we took all of the breast screening images that New Zealand has to date and train an IA engine as another tool to help clinicians diagnose, not to replace them, but just another tool. And there was one comment, Tom, I think it was when we first met, it's a term that I've repeated and quoted you to this day, is AI is not really artificial intelligence. It's better to view it as an intelligent assistant. Flip it around to IA.
I remember that.
and it's a really important concept because the technology can move quickly, but human behavior doesn't move as quickly. And you've got to join the two together to get an outcome. So one of the things that we've been discussing for some time, and fortunately for my past colleague, Ashley Bloomfield, gave approval for this. He's Tom, the Director General of Health these days, actually recently resigned from what has been a pretty tough year for him, tough couple of years. He's done an exceptionally good job. We got approval to access New Zealand's data. So through Tom's work with AWS via JPL, we got introduced to the hierarchy of AI research and product design. And we're just kicking that off again through Tom's support. So why I explain it like that, it's fine to have an idea. It's fine to look at how you could possibly apply technology to a problem. But when you've got the opportunity to look at seeing and visiting a place that does it as part of its day-to-day work in really extreme settings and problem-solving environments, it allows you to have a tangible discussion on how you set up a project to do something that hasn't quite been done before at the scale we're hoping to do it. And that's a very common story with some of the technologies that have been trialed, developed, implemented at NASA and particularly JPL, around how they can translate to other industries. Without the Innovation Center and Tom's work at JPL, we'd probably still be years away from having the confidence to think, how do we approach it? And who do we approach it with? So it's a long way of describing. When you've got an organization that really harnesses and values digital and technology innovation, and you've got a leadership and a team that comes together to make that a reality, it presents opportunities that you just couldn't even imagine, and we've been really fortunate to leverage off it.
Now, I think you said it well. Part of it is daring to experiment, and experiments fail. But so you have to celebrate the failure, because it's not really a failure. It's you're learning something. You know, it's that old story of Edison learning how 1,000 ways not to build a light bulb. But there's something to it. And so with machine learning and image recognition and all of the things that now go into breast screening, I think we're ready to, it's not an, this one is not an experiment anymore. It was when we started, but now it's going to save lives. So now it's execution. And that's where we are.
So this is in the space of research and breast cancer. So this is the ability to using AI to read the scans and be able to pick up, I guess, a lot more than a human can potentially, but also to be the accuracy, I think, is one of the other aspects that I've read about. But what is the practical application of this AI? If you could give us a bit of a rundown.
Good question, Ryan. So it's a good example of a technology that's had a good gestation in the space industry that can now be translated to solve another problem. So the problem we're solving is the task of reviewing breast screening images, the radiology task, is undertaken by two independent radiologists. And it takes, once you're qualified for med school, another 10 years to be qualified to read these images. And this is a terrible analogy, so please forgive me. It's very much like finding needles in haystacks. Most of the images, about 98% of them, are fine. And you're trying to find this very, very small number that are not fine. And as a human activity, it can be monotonous. And the clinicians have to focus so strongly because they can't afford to miss one, which is why there's two independent reads. There's a big quality process. The challenge all OECD countries have is the demand for breast screening is going through the roof, like a lot of demand in healthcare. And we don't have enough clinicians. Using AI as an opportunity to read an image based off the vast data set New Zealand has, which a lot of countries don't have data sets this good, it's a good application for the use of AI. It's an activity that AI and image recognition will do extremely well. And the aim is to support clinical practice, not replace it, but try and focus on the humans and the people doing what people are good at. And they are not good at looking at thousands of images day in, day out to try and find the small one that isn't. AI is really good at that. AI is not so good at dealing with people. It might get there, but long way to go. But people are really good at dealing with people. So we've gone from probably very similar to your time, early days around cloud, Tom, when we were looking at use of cloud in healthcare, enormous resistance to it. Now we're in a position where the opposite has occurred. New Zealand's one of the, I think, the forerunners in the use of cloud, particularly under the Ministry of Health's current leadership. So in a very short space of time, we've gone from an uncertain position around the technology to a strong supporting position around the technology, primarily because we've got a compelling problem to solve. We've got a workforce crisis that needs help. So 4 years ago, when we first had the idea, we were thinking about, we should just trial how good this is. 4 years down the track now, a number of organizations have already proved it. Our opportunity now is how good can we make it to support clinical practice, which is a much more exciting problem to solve than just seeing what the research potential might look like. So our goal here is not just to undertake research, but it's to use the data sets of New Zealand to create a strong clinical tool that can help clinicians and the value of that to come back to New Zealand. That involves a wide partnership, Victoria University, Ministry of Health, Tom and AWS, who are technology partners, both in New Zealand and in Seattle, and private radiology firm's clinical team, who are also offering support. So a lot of moving parts to this, but a lot of motivated people to achieve the same outcome, spread now over three continents. So just kicking it off with the ministry support, it's a hugely exciting project. And to be honest, Tom, it all stemmed from, I think, a phone call you made to AWS's exec saying, this would be a good one to do, let's give it a go.
Yeah. So, no, it's been a long time. But when you look at what the cloud, so the cloud enables so many things. And when I talk about the experiments leading to other things, the difference here is, let's pick the breast screening. Let's say you needed to rescreen all of the images ever taken. You could do that. you could just spin up many, many more computers and do it much faster than you could if you only had a few computers. And that message comes over and over and over in everything we do. And I used to do startups, and I would go get venture capital, and I would spend 60% of that on IT and office space and all that. Nowadays, you don't even need venture capital until you have your product just about finished and want to scale and market it. And if you build it on the cloud, it'll scale automatically up and down. So that's why I'm excited about the cloud. It's that innovation and the outcomes, saving life, answering the big questions. Are we alone?
Here's a personal example, and this is not breast cancer, but it happens to be my wife. She had a blood clot, a very extensive blood clot, and it's, I think, now a bit of a global case study because it's so big. And went from the heel of her foot all the way up behind the organ, so off radar is what we would say. And she was misdiagnosed for the cause. Basically, you understand that it wasn't really possible to be diagnosed properly, because we went back in 3.5 years after it had happened. I pushed and said, look, this is not right. We need to actually look into this further, you know, the pain, et cetera. And we went and had a scan by, I think the correct term is radiologist, but you correct me, Glenn, and they use the wand and wipe up down the leg and the vein to check out what the quality and blood blah was. And the person who was meant to do it was off sick that day. So the boss had to fill in, and he was just on retirement. And he started the session after his scanning. And after, he just spun around and said, where's your wheelchair? And we're like, sorry, what? And then he looked around and saw Nikki's high heels and said, did you walk in here on those? I'm like, yeah, why? And basically, he was so shocked because she has Meyer-Turner syndrome, which is when the artery wraps around the vein, and in a perfect storm, it constricts, and that's what causes the blood clot to set off. So it was nothing to do with blood clotting agents in her blood. It was that. But he turned around and said, this has only been recorded twice in New Zealand. The first was found 20 years ago by me, and you're the second. And there's all different levels of it. So we can all have a vein cross an artery, but it's very rare to have the full wrapping of the artery. Now, if you think about it, you're talking about breast cancer and the ability for one of two radiologists with 10 years experience each to see what is there. Imagine all these different things that we don't even know about that are in the medical textbooks, like Meyer-Turner syndrome and whatever it's next. And that, of course, AI, I imagine, in my perspective, is AI could pick up that and all the other wonderful and weird things that are causing problems that doctors are aware of, haven't looked at a textbook since they were at med school. It can really support, as you say, Glenn, a whole range of clinical work. So it's clear I have a real practical live example of where I see this being of great use. So a question, once you've got the breast cancer screening, are there plans to keep going in that space, or is it more of you need to focus and double down and get better and better and better and better as technology evolves? What's the opportunity for the world here?
There's a model that Tom had developed at JPL, which is technology adoption, to do the first thing, then do the next thing that's larger, and then do the really big things. We documented that process around your first project, Tom, which was putting the surface hubs in the spacecraft build room. But it was a really good lesson. I'm at a conference over the next while where I'm talking on a particular topic. But often the first one, which I will do this time, raise is fail fast is a nice concept. But when you're looking at innovation and doing something new, it's a confidence game. And the first one must be a guaranteed success because it's a cultural activity within a group of people or an organization. And as soon as you've got the first one successful, then it gives confidence that not only your own team, but the leadership around the organization, that they can do the next one and then the next one. So that first one's got to be a guaranteed home run. So breast screening in terms of technical task for AI is actually not all that hard technically. And the more data, just the better refined it's going to be. Now, there's work around asteroid detection that's quite difficult and complex, much more so than breast screening, and it's making good inroads into those problems. So breast screening should be okay. There's other imagery like CT scans, MRI scans. They are not easy. They are complex and difficult. So our first one, hopefully, will not only give good returns, it will take some time to get it right, but it gives us the platform to do the really hard stuff. And they won't be quick and easy. They will take time, and they will be complex. But we've got to start on the first step, and it's as much about getting the technology right as it is taking everyone with you, and even our own teams getting the confidence to do the next bits. So the breast screening one, that'll consume us for a little while. We're going to stay there for some time, because our aim is to develop a clinically useful tool, and that's not an overnight task. But once we get there, and once we've embedded it, and we've got an ability to scale it, then we'll turn our minds to other things. So at the moment, we've got interesting strategic aspirations, but we've got to keep our eyes on our bread and butter, which is getting this one done right.
If I may add, it's also the approach you take. So you don't have to be perfect. You just have to, you know, perfection is the enemy of progress, because you never get started. So in this case, if you look at, there's some that are absolutely not cancer. The computer can, the machine learning can do that. There's some that are absolutely cancer. Machine learning can do that. There's in the middle, that's where you need the human. So it's that intelligent assistant again, and you can make that, you learn more and more and more so that you can automate more and more. And then when you take that same approach to the next task, which is harder, you just do the same. You just tighten, start wide with where the uncertainty, and then just tighten it as you go so you can automate more. So I think that's, with that approach, you can get started quickly and don't take risk with human lives until you're right. So I think that's that whole innovation approach. Just sometimes just get started and you'll figure it out on the way. Don't take stupid risks, but we don't tend to.
No. Well, look, this is a wonderful session, and we're just coming over the 30 minutes. And I know that, Glenn, you're in the, the Beverly Hills Ballroom. So we were joking that Glenn might be able to finish with a bit of an amber, but you know, that's not probably what Glenn would like to finish on. Let's have a look at some tech and some final words. So if I could just take a little moment to sum up what we've spoken about today and invite you to think about the what you'd like to share as closing remarks around innovation, around the history of the work you've done together, the future of the work you've done together, and other parts of technology. It's an open invite for you to leave your closing remarks. But just to summarise, we've had both Glenn Willoughby, New Zealand CIO, and Tom Soderstrom, American CIO, with a background of NASA, JPL, and some huge achievements in the innovation space around cloud and AI, which is where Glenn and Tom connected through, I think, around 2015 was the date mentioned for the CIO event here in New Zealand, which led to discussions, presentations, and work, and has now led to work in the space of using AI, another part of the innovation background, to work on breast screening. And the points discussed around that it's a matter of progression from a place of confidence. So get the breast cancer screening nailed, and then move on to the second, the third, the fourth, and then the bigger one. So it's progressing with confidence, which was great. And Tom's quote, I think, was perfection as the enemy of progress. So a bit of a wee round up there. Of course, worked through projects at JPL NASA, and now working through this project in the cancer, I think from Glenn's perspective, and now Tom at AWS. So with that, if I could invite you two gentlemen to closing remarks to close out the session and give people some insights, inspiration, and background to what we've spoken about, that'd be lovely.
Okay. Glenn, do you want to go first?
Oh, sure. One of the other things I've just started to spend some time on is working at Singularity University as their CIO, and we get exposure to all sorts of great people, all sorts of good ideas. But one probably takeaway I've had through some of that work is just how fast you can enable a good idea from idea to execution. It's much, much faster than I could have ever imagined, and I still get the pace of technology wrong. But what I'm seeing more so with the work that we're doing with Tom and others are doing through Singularity University, and you definitely see this at NASA JPL, is the speed to get things done to a high quality using cloud-based solutions is lightning. And if I look at a way of trying to draw an algorithm for success, if you get great people together that have great motives and good spirit, and you align that with some amazing proven technology that gets you to move at pace, you can do some pretty amazing things really, really fast, and it allows you to solve problems much quicker, but more than that, allows you to learn much faster than you could have. And I'd probably argue pace of change is probably starting to marry Moore's law and becoming much more exponential than it was. If I look at just the work we're doing, Tom, around breast screening, we're going from idea to building it in a matter of weeks, and then analyzing it a few weeks later. We could have never contemplated that when we first talked about the idea. So that's fun and exciting times, particularly as hopefully COVID's coming to the end and we can start to get around and meet people a little more.
Yeah, I think that well said. I'm going to finish up with going back a few years. Glenn asked me if I would show underprivileged kids in Auckland JPL. So I took my iPhone, put it on the gimbal, and just walked around JPL and gave a tour. And it was wonderful. These kids had fantastic questions. I was really impressed. And now when we look at what they can do, when you look at the space economy, so my dream would be that I've inspired some of them to help answer those big questions. Because right now you can actually explore the heavens and participate as a citizen scientist with just a laptop. You don't have to own a spacecraft. You don't have to be a national space agency. You can join a startup. And New Zealand has several space startups. And cloud is what makes that happen. You find your partners, you share your data, you share your code, your stories, and then you explore. And so my dream would be to have one of those kids one day come, hey, I saw you when you walked around JPL. That would be amazing. Because they are the ones that will answer those big questions.
Yeah. What a wonderful way to close out the session. So if you've just come in at some part of the show and didn't see the beginning, go back to the beginning and you'll hear the talk around when Tom was speaking with NASA, and the mission was to solve the big questions and looking at what's in deep space. I guess, what is anyone else out there? I think there is personally. How are we created, et cetera. So to cycle back to the closing, Glenn and Tom organised for Tom to do a tour around JPL for kids here in New Zealand. And his closing remark was, one day one of those kids is going to come to me and say, hey, potentially we've solved this or we've found the answer. And the inspiration came from that day. So that would be amazing. And gentlemen, I just want to say thank you so much for your time and the effort. People can appreciate with you being in a hotel in the hills there, Glenn. And I think, Tom, you're at home in another part of America. Thank you so much for the effort you put into being here on the show today. We're really honored to have you both. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Ryan. Nice to see you. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you.
Thank you.
All right. Taki te anō to everybody out there. Thank you very much, team. We really appreciate that.